Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 125. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in once again for my co-host David Todd, as he's been doing all summer, is Alex Cazora. Alex, on this July 11th, happy slowest day of the sports world.
You know how to bring the people in. You know how to entice them, Dave. But yeah, it's... Man, it's been today's going to be tough. These last couple weeks have been a little tough, just trying to rack our brains to find something to write about.
Yeah, you know, this is the day, of course, Major League Baseball is off today with the All-Star game coming on Tuesday. At least on Wednesday, the day after the All-Star game, we have the ESPYs. I don't know how many people look forward to that, but at least it's something, and it's no coincidence that that's held on the day after the All-Star game as well, too. Tim Duncan from the San Antonio Spurs announced his retirement this morning. That's probably not a coincidence. He'll have the really, barring anything spectacular happening, he'll have the whole day to himself. So this is for those that are listening to the podcast today, God bless you, because we're going to struggle to find a few things to talk about here. I guess, unfortunately, one of the first things we're going to have to discuss once again is Le'Veon Bell. Thankfully, Le'Veon Bell, had a interview, I guess, over the weekend or heading into the weekend with one of the ESPN guys. More than anything, I think he just tried to clarify, some things about the lyrics in his newest rap song. And, two things that I kind of took away from this is, I guess first and foremost that he expects to take or expects a deal to get done between now and the start of the regular season, and second of all is he's on track for the start of training camp.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm running out of stuff to add at this point. I don't think rap lyrics have been analyzed so much since the very beginning of rap, when like the FCC thought it was the devil's music and they had Satanist, words in there.
But you see why we have to.
No,
though,
I mean,
right?
I understand, because it's really the only pressing, not even pressing issue, but the only really, topic of discussion right now. I've said before that, I think a deal has potential to get done. I think the timeline makes things a little bit more difficult. I think he'll be the second highest paid back in the league comfortably. I guess I think the big part I took away, though, was just, again, him referencing the mental obstacle. And I think the more interesting kind of side discussion from that is, Dave, if it was you, would you play him at all in the preseason?
No, not at all. In fact, I will be shocked. I will really be shocked if he does not start off on active PUP. I really will, because if you go back to the things Kevin Colbert has said over the years when it comes to players with these kind of knee injuries, and specifically go back to listen to what he had to say about Rashard Mendenhall several years ago, that normally it takes a full year for these players to be back, to where they were prior to injury. And even though Le'Veon Bell's likely to be ready for the start of the season, I just can't see, the reason, A, to rush him, and B, to play him at all during the preseason. I would wait for those hits of his to come maybe late in training camp. So I will be absolutely shocked if he does not start training camp off on the PUP list, and if he doesn't start off on PUP, even then I would just bring him along incredibly slow. The thing about the active PUP list is it's almost a safety net mm-hmm. of sorts for you to have, you know, as he goes through training camp and the remainder of the preseason. Obviously, he can't practice or play while on active PUP, but, you know, if he's out there doing drills, I mean, at least he can do that kind of stuff. And if he has some sort of setback, at least you don't have a roster spot locked up to him, and at least you don't have to place him on designated to return kind of thing as far as that goes. So,
well, I mean,
yeah, that's where I am on his injury still. I wouldn't expect him to even be able to participate in training camp, especially the early stages.
Yeah, I don't think active PUP and him not playing at all in the preseason are mutually exclusive. I think he has a good chance to start on active PUP for the first little bit, just so he isn't so chomping at the bit that he tries to push himself too far, and it might help him shut up for a little bit, because I know the team wants to be cautious with him, and they can just say, yeah, we can't play it right now, you're on active PUP, rules say no. But I would like to see him get a little, and this is just if he's ready to go. Again, I'm not here to rush him either. That's the worst thing you can do. But I would like to see him get, you know, maybe two series in that third game, just because we know that, you know, the mental hurdle is probably the biggest thing he's dealing with right now. And I think him getting just a couple of times to cut and play in a game just to kind of, you know, help get over that a little bit and kind of gauge where he's at would be a little helpful.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's definitely – well, here's the thing. You would have to remove him from
right.
active PUP for that for
yes.
that to happen.
Yes.
You would think that he would come off of active PUP a week or two before
yes.
an actual
right.
appearance.
He's
got
to get some training. He's
got to
get reps in camp to get ready. You're not going to put him in a game
right.
cold, of course.
Right, right. So if that's going to be the case, then maybe he starts camp off not on the active PUP list, and you just slowly, slowly mm-hmm. integrate him into contact at practice. But to me, it seems like a no-win situation to do that early on. So, you know, if you want to use – here we are. You know, if you want to talk about him seeing one or two series in the third preseason game, you know, a week or so into training camp, you're gonna have to remove him off of off back to PUP list. So
and that's fine. I mean, that's not a huge deal. It's you know, it's not like they don't count against the 90, and if you remove him, then you have to make a roster move. You know,
right,
so
right.
I mean, I just would hate for him to have to make that to really feel how that knee feels in that first game against Washington. I would like the opportunity for him just to be able to cut one or two times, just so he can kind of test that knee out. And he's not, you know, and I think that would make him less nervous for that opening game too, because now he knows how his knee feels, and he's not, you know, not going to be have that in the back of his mind of because I mean there's enough to worry about in week one. We're here to win football games, you know. I don't want to have to worry about do I trust my knee? How's my knee going to feel in that first cut, that first tackle? You know, I would if he's healthy and ready to go, just a little bit of time, just to maybe put his mind at ease and put my mind at ease too.
Do you think he starts off training camp on active PUP?
I think it could go either way, of course, but I think he would. I think in my scenario, just hypothetically, I would have him on active PUP for about the first week, kind of ease him into things. Second week, you're getting some training camp reps, just to, you know, get yourself ready. Third game, you get about two series in, get the ball a couple times, and then fourth game, of course, you're shut down.
When let's see, what date was that? Was that original injury? That was
November the first.
Okay. Yeah. So he's what? December, January, February, March, April, May, June, July. He is 8 months removed.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, basically from surgery, because I think he had the surgery about a week or so after.
Yeah, swelling had to go down.
So I mean, we're right at the eight month mark now. He won't even be 9 months by the time training camp opens. So that's way too early to expect him to get out there and do anything. So that's why I say, I mean, even by the end of camp, we're talking 10 months. Now, say what you will about what Adrian Peterson did a few years ago, you know. I don't know.
Let me ask you is, and I know it was a pretty severe injury, but it wasn't the ACL. So does the 1 year timeline apply directly to an MCL and PCL?
I only play a doctor on Twitter.
So I'm just, I mean, it might not be, you know, and it's all case by case, of course, and it might not be exactly because it's not, the ACL was intact. The ACL was fine. You know, it was obviously a severe injury, the MCL, the PCL, he still missed. You know, they put him on IR right away in November. They didn't even think about waiting it out. But you might not be held to that one-year timeline the same way you are with an ACL.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I'll just continue to say what I've said all along. I will be shocked if he doesn't show up on active PUP. Where it goes from there, who knows? Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I think he will be removed from that list by the start of the regular season. Mm-hmm. So,
and like you said, even if we use that 1 year timeline, either way, we're 2 months shy. We're 10 months in, and so either way, you're playing him before that 1 year comfort level.
Right, and I just think you just kind of bring him along slowly in the first quarter of the season there. But here we are still talking about Le'Veon Bell. We're not going to get into we beat the contract thing to death. We'll just have to wait and see if this thing happens from the time he reports to training camp to the time the regular season starts, which, you know, you could be seeing a last week kind of thing with him during training camp and the contract. So hopefully he's not going to give us too much more to talk about between now and the start of training camp, and we'll have to go from there. Alex, before we go in and talk about a positional group today, and that positional group will be tight ends, I've started the annual kind of training camp roster polls. Mm-hmm. For us, and I like to do these every year. Basically, you know, guys that were on the roster or on the practice squad ending the season last year, guys that we kind of consider roster bubble kind of guys at this point. And, you know, it's fun to look back at these things and see what people voted on a year ago on these guys, whether or not they think they'll make the 53. I've already done three of these as of Monday morning. The first one was Chris Hubbard. Will Chris Hubbard make the final 53?
You know, I'm going to do my training camp roster. I know you've already done one edition, but I'm going to do mine right before camp. I'm going to say yes for now. That's how I voted, just because I feel like we get into the same trap every year of, oh, Hubbard's not going to make the team. He's not athletic enough. He's not big enough. Where do you really play him? What's his best position? I've been saying that for 2 years now, and he's made the team both years, and the team really seems to like him. So I'm going to stop dogging Chris Hubbard and let him be at least the favorite going into things for once, and we'll see how Finney and guys like that, you know, if they can take a spot. But we've been counting out Chris Hubbard, and he keeps making the team, so I'm going to stop being wrong.
You know, last year in the playing, in the 30-something snaps that he received last year in the Steelers offense, I think 24 or 25 of those was as an extra blocking tight end. Mm-hmm. He had like 6, 7, 8 of them replacing Alejandro Villanueva in, I think, two different games that Villanueva had to leave a few snaps for minor injuries. I think one or two of those snaps were kneel down snaps that he had at left tackle. He obviously has played some center and guard, you know, during his career with the Steelers. Where do you expect to see him? I mean, look, this team went out and signed Ryan Harris during the offseason to give them some depth. They obviously also drafted Gerald Hawkins as well, too, who we think best suited to play tackle, at least initially. Do you expect to see Hubbard during the preseason at tackle, guard, center? Yes.
all the above. Yeah, I mean, he could kind of go anywhere. I mean, you know, obviously the roster's kind of set right now. You have a bunch of tackles that you want to get a look at, Harrison and Hawkins and Mahalik and guys like that. But I think Hubbard will generally be somewhere on the interior. You know, maybe, you know, he gets work at the guard spots. I think in my roster layout, it's kind of the most logical, because center, you got Pouncey, who of course might not play a ton, but you have him there. You have Cody Wallace. You have Quentin Schooley. You know, at guard, you need some guys to fill in there. So I think he'll probably be left guard, right guard, but you know, he'll get flipped around some, I bet. And we know he's capable of basically playing all five spots. I mean, I guess we haven't seen a ton at right tackle, but I bet the team would put him in there if they really, really had to.
A real, real poor man's Kelvin Beachum.
I think back to like even a poor man's Troy Essex. You know, something like that. I mean, yeah, it's the versatility, though, that's a Scotland card. And as
I don't know, Essex was a better guard than he was a tackle, though, right?
Well, that's why I said poor man. That's right, Essex. But, yeah, I mean, Hubbard's a tackle eligible, and I think that they like being able to do that from time to time. And the guy can play everywhere, and we still know that versatility. So if Hubbard's your ninth man, and whoever gets the spot, Hubbard, Finney, Schooley, whoever, they're going to be the ninth man. They probably won't even be active on Sundays. I mean, it's almost guaranteed, at least till injury strike. But, you know, so we know that the scenario for that ninth man to play is injuries. And when you have injuries, you don't know where it's going to be, and you need someone that can be versatile. And Hubbard is as versatile as anybody on this roster.
Is this – would we both be shocked if they kept 10 offensive linemen this time around?
Yeah, that seems just too heavy. And it's not like the talent is so good where you're just like, wow, we got to keep 10. You're going to go heavy somewhere else. You're going to go heavy at corner. You're going to go heavy at linebacker. You're not going to go that heavy along the offensive line.
So, in other words, this final spot, this spot, Hubbard spot that we're talking about, is one that – right now, we could probably circle the battle as being between Finney and Hubbard. You agree? Is there anybody else you'd be willing to throw in that battle?
Not me willing to throw in, but you got to be made of rubber, not made of steel. So we'll see if someone else shows up, whether that's, you know, I guess you can think more of the interior guys, a Quentin Schooley or a Cole Manhart or, you know, somebody along those lines. You know, you can't rule that out, but the very likely in the names that you're going to hear talked about are going to be Chris Hubbard versus B.J. Finney.
And to me, I think Hubbard's just got, between those two, both those two are just going to have to show snaps at center and guard.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really think because, you know, barring an injury to one of those other tackles, look, I mean, not only would we be surprised to see a guy like Hubbard dress, we'd be even more surprised if he did dress, if he still managed to get any snaps at a tackle position this year.
Well, I mean, you know, let's say just hypothetically that one of the tackles go down, and I'm not going to say which because I don't want to jinx it, and Steeler fans will yell at me. Who do you think would be the third tackle in that situation, then? Hawkins or a guy like Hubbard? That's tough because Hawkins is a young guy. He's supposed to be a senior this year. He's super, super raw, and he's barely played tackle. He's been moving around some. So I think there's a chance it would be Hubbard because of the comfort level.
I'd much rather, as a fan, though, be able to see what Hawkins has.
you want to throw him the fire.
I want to see, you know, the groceries have been shot for. I want to see him off the shelf a little bit.
But that's not the answer, though.
Yeah, golly. I mean, the thing with Hubbard is we've seen so little of him in games, you know. And quite honestly, his time at the interior position wasn't good in the limited snaps that he's received. He's played so few at tackle, it's hard to even judge. You know, so, I mean, I don't expect my doors to be blown off by him during the preseason. But at the same token, I don't know what to expect from B.J. Finney either, you know, because there's such few snaps. I expect we're going to see both those guys play quite a bit during the preseason,
Definitely.
And, you know, 2 weeks in, you know, we ought to be able to start really circling some names in ink, I would be able to think there.
You didn't answer the question, though. I got to get an answer out of you. Who would it be, Hubbard or Hawkins?
I would say Hawkins.
You would? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I would say Hawkins.
Okay, that's fair.
And that's more than just my want, you know, on top of it. I'm not convinced Hubbard offers you anything that you won't already get out of a guy like Hawkins.
All right, okay.
Especially on a right side guy. I mean, because let's face it, you know, you got three tackles. If you lost one of them, one of the other ones is going to play on the left side anyway, I would think. And I don't know, you know, where is Gilbert? We'd never, outside of a couple preseasons ago, I mean, it's been several preseasons since we've seen Gilbert actually take a snap at left tackle.
Right.
And I think if memory serves me, that total was like 11 or 12 snaps. It wasn't many.
Yeah, it's basically forgettable at this point.
Yeah, so in other words, you know, I guess it would boil down to, let's assume Gilbert wasn't the guy that was injured. Who would you who would you most be comfortable with playing left tackle, Hawkins or Hubbard? I'm still going to go Hawkins.
No. Because, I mean, the talent level is gonna you know, lean towards Hawkins. But from a comfort, from a protection standpoint, from a call standpoint, you know, different protections and slide protections and blitz pickup and stuff, you got to go with a guy that's done it and been in practice and has been in the room for
hey, they threw Villanueva out there last year, and don't give me the practice squad stuff, you know, for a year, because I just have a feeling it would be Hawkins. I just have no I have no confidence in Hubbard whatsoever, and thus in my own poll that I put up, I voted against him.
So. All right, good deal.
Would either of us be shocked if we're sitting here and no injuries and Hubbard ends up being the ninth guy? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, he keeps doing it each year, and we keep saying he's not going to do it, and he's proven us wrong, so I figured time to give him his credit.
Right. Let's see. The second guy in these polls was Jordan Zumwalt. Got it. Just won't die. Won't go away. I think this is the year he finally goes away, though. Look, he had some impressive snaps during the two preseason games that he played in last year. But it's important to put context to when he played those snaps, who those snaps were against. You would expect in a second season last year, he would be a guy that shines late in preseason games. Hip injury ended up being his undoing once again, had to go on IR, had to have surgery. Thus, the reason he was kept around the entire season. Here he is heading to La Trobe for the third time. He's got a lot of competition he's going against. You know, Steven Johnson they signed during the offseason. They drafted Tyler Matakevich to battle against him. Depending on what position you think LJ Fort plays, does he play inside? Does he play outside? Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of irrelevant here. Mm-hmm. I think it's irrelevant as to the position. The other young linebacker they drafted as well too. It's going to come down to special teams with a guy like Jordan Zumwalt, in my opinion, because the depth chart ahead of him and inside linebackers are already stacked. I would be absolutely shocked to see a guy like Jordan Zumwalt play outside linebacker in any of these practices or preseason games. Can he stay healthy? Can he contribute on special teams? That's the end of the story.
Yep, black and white, really, for Jordan Zumwalt. And I know he's still hanging around, and some people will say, well, they must kind of like him if he's still around, but they've also drafted a bunch of linebackers, so they can't like him that much. We'll see what he can do if he's healthy. I mean, his body of work is still pretty limited, so you can't say that he's bad. It's just he hasn't been out there. Can't make the club from the tub, as the old saying goes. I don't expect him to make it. The competition is super, super tough. But we'll see if he can just, you know, his goal is to make it through a camp. He hasn't done that yet, so that's the first step.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wrote in that post, his biggest competitor really is going to be himself.
Yeah,
because especially early on, I mean, this is a guy that it seems the first 2 years, you know, we're saying, okay, you know, another practice goes by without Jordan Zumwalt. So obviously he should know what's going on around him in the defense. It wouldn't be surprising to see him be a guy in the first two preseason games that registers, I don't know, 15 total tackles, and people are saying, oh, did you see, you know, because of him cracking the stat sheet like that, people, you know, kind of trying to tout him as being a roster hopeful. But he better impress Danny Smith. That's the guy that he better impress, in my opinion. I voted no. Did you as well?
I did too.
today is a guy I know it'd be hard for you to vote against. Today's poll that went up. Of course, I'm talking about Ross Ventrone. You know, once again, you could put Steelers wide receiver Ross Ventrone. It wouldn't make any difference here. You can put linebacker next to his name. This is a guy that when's the last time he logged a snap at in a meaningful NFL game at safety?
Oh, I was going to say when he was at Villanova, But I'm not sure if he's ever done it in the NFL.
I think, didn't he log a snap or two for the Patriots? I'm going to have to go back and research that. It seems like he did see playing time somewhere at a safety position with the Patriots. But, I mean, plain and simple, this guy is a special teams demon. He made the 53 last year out of training camp as a special teams player. He was on the roster the first five games of the season last year with the Steelers. Hamstring injury. They probably had a wink-wink agreement with him. Look, we won't place you on IR, you know, as long as you don't file any kind of injury settlement with us. They basically just cut him loose after that San Diego game and that hamstring injury. He surfaced back on the Patriots practice squad a few weeks later. That stay only lasted, I think, something like 10 or 12 days. Was cut loose again. He didn't surface again until the Steelers signed him right before the end of the regular season to their practice squad. Almost two or three days later after that, he was promoted to their 53. He played in the final regular season game against the Cleveland Browns, and then subsequently played in both playoff games for the Steelers as well. At some point, and it could be this year, the Steelers have to really start weighing where his special teams value is versus a cheaper guy on the roster. He's going to be hard to beat. He's going to be hard to push out of a roster spot, but this very well could be the year that he doesn't make it.
You know, I said this before, at least I alluded to it, Dave, that I think it's kind of going to be determined all about the depth that this team's roster has. Last year, their depth in training camp, that roster was pretty poor, and so Ventrone ends up making it. If they have a logjam at a position and they just can't part ways with somebody, then I think Ventrone gets on as that last guy. If they have good depth somewhere and they really want to keep this one guy and go heavy at a position group, let's say 11 linebackers, or let's say six corners, or let's say six receivers, then I think Ventrone gets pushed off. So, Dave, you know, he wears 35. I'd flip those numbers. I'd call him 53 because he'd be the 53rd man onto this roster the way you construct it. You can yo-yo him on and off because you know he's probably going to be available in free agency, and you can pick him up whenever. So I think it's really just about, you know, what the other guys do. I think he's literally going to be the last man onto the roster.
If he doesn't make it, is it in lieu of another defensive back, or is it in lieu of another, you know, possible linebacker? In other words, if we're looking at this from a grouping stage, if he doesn't make it, is it because he was beat out by, you know, another defensive back?
Well, I don't think it's going to be a safety, because I don't think there's a safety that's going to really do that. So I think they would, and for them to only carry nine defensive backs would seem a little light. So I would kind of think that they would keep six corners if they don't cut Ventrone. But like I said, I think it could just come down to a logjam somewhere else where they really want to keep that you know, 11th linebacker, do something a little unusual, or maybe that 10th offensive lineman, or, you know, whoever the training camp darling that shows up, and they just can't get rid of, a la Rosie Nix last year or Terrence Garvin a couple of years ago. I think it's just going to be a product of the numbers game for Ventrone.
No safety value whatsoever, right?
Nope, just special teams and that great hair.
He is fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when you watch him go down and cover, especially on the All-22, when you watch him cover kicks and cover punts, I mean, it really is something to watch. You want to talk, and I wrote about it, you know, kind of his recklessness, abandon, and his team, you know, team first kind of attitude. I voted against him this time. Would you vote against him this time?
I did. It broke my heart to do on a Monday, but I think somebody else shows up as, you know, the guy that pushes Ventrone off, because you just can't. There's going to be someone that you don't know now that you just can't cut come the end of the preseason. But he's a guy that's always going to be on speed dial. And maybe it's practice squad, because is he still eligible because of the whole approved season? That's so just crazy. I can't get my head around the practice squad rules.
Every year it's tough to decipher these new rules with this practice squad. Part of me wants to say he is still eligible, but, man, he's been on it so many times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wonder at some point does a cutoff date. I'll have to research that with these new rules, or, you know, with this extra, you know, with one of these new players having a little bit more time, you know, allotment to be eligible there. Let's move on and talk about the tight end position today. As far as tight end positional groupings go, the team obviously lost veteran Heath Miller during the offseason to retirement. They went out there and signed Ladarius Green. You have Jesse James back with his team this year. You have a veteran in Matt Spaeth looking to be back on this team once again. Let's start with talking about the addition of Ladarius Green, which really all we have to go on is the tape at San Diego right now. We don't even have any practice time to talk about during the offseason because he's missed all of it so far because of ankle. And this is another guy that very well could start off the preseason or the training camp on the active PUP list, depending on how he's doing. He's not Heath Miller, right?
Of course not. No, no one is. Every Steeler fan will tell you that. Yeah, I think that's a big storyline to watch, though, Dave, is does he start on active PUP? Because if he does that, misses the first week, week and a half, 2 weeks, that's a valuable time missed when you're not out there for the entire spring. And that could really have some bad consequences of him getting the playbook under him, getting comfortable on the field, getting some chemistry with Ben Roethlisberger, you know, figuring out how to use him in this offense. That's a very underrated storyline to watch.
And even after he was signed, you know, my biggest fear with him, and you know, you broke him down as well too, was this guy is not a traditional run blocking tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And look, no doubt you can line him up outside, and you know he's got redeeming qualities as a pass catching, new age era kind of tight end and all like that. We accept that. We know that he's probably going to be an upgrade, you know, as far as a pass catcher goes, you know, to someone like a guy like Heath Miller. But even in his declining years with Heath Miller, Ladarius Green was not even close to being that as a blocker. And being as how he's missed all the offseason, there's no way he's improved in that area there. And you have to wonder how much time he's going to get in the pre, you know, how quickly of advancements can he make in that position. There's questions now as to where, you know, the type of snaps he's going to get at the start of the season, even though he's the highest paid tight end on the roster.
Yeah, like I said, you know, those reps are invaluable right now. You got to have them. You got to figure out how he's going to fit in this offense because you're right, he is so unconventional from Heath. He's not like a mini Heath where he's going to be used, you know, necessarily in the exact same way. I do think the one upside, though, is that if you go back, look at that Chargers tape, he was still used in some ways, not as often, but used in the same schematic way as Heath Miller, whether he did some inline blocking. He was able to take on defensive ends and pass protection by himself. So some of those concepts were similar to Pittsburgh. The frequency just wasn't there. And, of course, I think the ability to execute is not going to be as close to what Heath Miller can do. So I take a little comfort in that he's been in those situations before, but he's definitely not going to be as good at him. But like we said before, Dave, I think having that move tight end, that guy you can play anywhere, is really fun weapon to have, especially now post-Martavis Bryant. And I think you can be really creative with what you can do with him as an offense. That slot fade that I broke down right away, I think you can see that become a big staple play in Pittsburgh.
Because of his blocking not being his best game, is he still a 95% total snap a game guy?
Well,
in other words, I mean, Heath Miller was out there every offensive play. Is that still going to be the case with a guy like Ladarius Green, or are you going to mix and match?
Not assuming health at all, assuming he is healthy, and of course that's up in the air, it still might be tough just because, you know, there might be, I don't know, man, that's a really good question. You're paying him $20 million, I mean, overall. You know, but do you want him short to be the blocker?
Yeah, I mean, is he your de facto 11 personnel tight end?
I mean, I think when the team goes 11, you're going to expect Ladarius Green in there. But are there going to be some certain situations where you want to take Green off? Some goal line, maybe some short, you know, other short yardage. I mean, he does have a nice frame, and he can be a body that gets in the way. And sometimes in short yardage, that's all you need is just to kind of be a buffer. Maybe he'll be a 90% kind of guy, a little less than Heath, just because, you know, what situations would you take him off? I'm trying to rack my brain to answer that question, and I'm having some trouble.
Yeah, I think short yardage for starters. I think in some situations when you pretty much know that you maybe want to run the ball, maybe you put a guy like Jesse James out there in his place if you're going to keep him tucked to the end of the line of scrimmage.
But if you're running short yardage, you're probably running at least two tight ends, and you're going to have Green out there by default.
Sure, sure. When the season's over, will he have played more or less snaps than Heath Miller played last year?
How many did Heath play? Did you say it? I guess the answer doesn't even really matter because I think he'll play less because I think that injury. I don't know. There's some worry that with the injury, he's got a concussion history. He's got this ankle thing dogging him. He's missing reps. I think it's gonna be some growing pains early of trying to figure out how he's gonna fit in this offense because he's such kind of a different guy that Steelers have never really had before. I think I love Todd Haley. I think he's a really creative guy, but I think there's gonna be just trying to some time trying to figure out how the heck do we use Ladarius Green.
With that said, though, in our conversation several weeks ago, do you expect him to still register at least 50 catches?
Still currently, yeah. I mean, I'll stick to the numbers I said before. I'm not going to go back on them because it's not like things have changed. But, I recognize that the health is a very real factor and him meshing with his offense and getting reps. That's why I said I think seeing what his reps are like early in training camp, where he starts out active pup or not, is going to be really important. Because if this guy misses 2.5-3 weeks of camp, I mean, he's going to really have a tough time trying to get back on that train.
Jesse James, second season, really, really seemed to grow a little bit, I think, in his limited snaps late last season. More than anything, his willingness to block out on the edge, kind of a la what Matt Spaeth and Heath Miller had done for years in this offense. We don't really know too much. We saw limited route running out of him last year. A guy, though, you would think this year he's the number two tight end in two tight end situations, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I think his blocking is good enough, and he obviously gives you a lot more as a receiver than Matt Spaeth. And we know Spaeth, who we'll talk about here in a second, isn't a guarantee to make this team. So, I think James opens up comfortably as the number two tight end. You got to start working towards the future. I thought he made nice strides last year. The game didn't look too big for him. I mean, he was 21 years old last year. I think he just turned 22 in May or whatever it was. He's still, I think, was he the fifth youngest player on this roster or the second youngest player? I forget which one it is, but super young guy. He was able to make some plays out there. The one block he had against, I think, Oakland on that screen to Martavis, I think.
Right.
That what it was? Yeah, that was a big play. That first game actually came against Oakland. He's out there. He's blocking Alden Smith by himself. That's what the Steelers kind of do. You know, if you're a tight end, you're going to play like Heath Miller. Doesn't matter if you're a 10-year guy or a first-year guy. And he's held his own. So I think overall, I think I was impressed by what I saw in year one. I think we'll make some big strides here in year two.
And that, now more than a year and a half, or year plus removed from him being drafted, we now know he's more Matt Spaeth than he is Heath Miller, right?
I don't know. I think it's still up in the air. I don't want to start saying exactly who he is and who he isn't. He's never, I don't think, is he going to be a number one tight end ever? Maybe. I don't know. I think we're still a ways away. I'm glad the Steelers aren't pressing him into that role this year because I don't think that would have been good, if they hadn't signed Ladarius Green. I'm just trying to focus on who Jesse James is and really not to compare him to Heath or Spaeth.
Still, when using him and a guy like Ladarius Green both in your offense in some situations, you have a lot more flexibility in the passing game than you did with Heath Miller / Matt Spaeth.
Oh, yeah. Of course, yeah, tenfold. I mean, because Spaeth, he's a lineman, and Heath was pretty limited, obviously. Now you give yourself, you can run 12 personnel and be a passing threat. In past years, you run 12 personnel, and you wouldn't be as much of a passing threat. So if you can always, plant that seed in the defender's mind of, hey, we got to watch for those seams, we got to watch for the vertical go ball, it's going to help out your run game. You might see a little bit less, teams stacking the box or being so run committed. So in that way, it's going to maybe help out your run game maybe a tiny bit as well.
for people that listen to this podcast for a while, they know I'm a huge 12 personnel fan. If you have the right personnel to kind of run it, always jealous for a number of years with what the Patriots been able to do with 12 personnel. The Bengals for a little while there with Eifert and Gresham, it was fun to see how their offense could kind of dictate and play off of the personnel across from them with you know, lining up one way in more of a heavier look, seeing a lighter personnel grouping up against or a heavier personnel grouping up against them, and then kind of splitting, you know, one of those guys out. I think the Steelers now have the opportunity to kind of do that. But with that said, I still don't think I'm going to see 12 personnel as much as I'd probably like to, but I would like to see it used and used more as part of the passing game as opposed to part of the running game.
You'll
this year
have
as well,
to do
too.
A quick study and see how much it's been used the last 2 years and maybe track that for this year, because I am really curious, because I think it'll increase. I just don't know by how much.
As far as passing plays used out of that personnel grouping?
I'd break it down in everything, total, 12 personnel, pass plays. Yeah, I'd look at it every which way just to kind of see what trends come up.
All right, the next guy, Matt Spaeth, the guy that I say it every time I talk about the guy, you will not find a bigger defender fan kind of Matt Spaeth than me over the years. But with that said, you know, I think the tape showed it last year. I think we saw some decline in Matt Spaeth as a blocker. Obviously, the kind of the health issues are creeping up with him now. And because you have a guy like Green on the roster, because you have a guy, a younger kind of version in Jesse James, and because Matt Spaeth's never been a special teams demon, this could be the year that they move on from Matt Spaeth.
Yeah, again, I think kind of similar to Jordan Zumwalt, Spaeth battling himself. He's got to make sure he stays healthy. We already know he's probably going to get every other day off. That's the way it was last year. He's an older guy. He's kind of, you know, bones are getting a little creaky. So, you know, you're going to get Jesse James. You're going to get Xavier Grimble. Those guys are going to, you know, ideally play every single day. So they're going to get the reps and the exposure and the chance to make their mark. You know, if you keep Spaeth, it's going to be for, I think, that third tight end blocker. So if you go into some real heavy situations or if there is an injury, you know, you have someone there that you know is a strong blocker. Is that going to be enough, though? You know, that's that becomes tougher and tougher to argue each year, I think.
We talked about David Johnson a little bit when talking about our kind of our fullback running back positional group in the last podcast. There's not really much to add about David Johnson, in my opinion. Yes, he can give you snaps as an end-of-the-line tight end. Yes, he can play H-back on the move. Yes, he can play fullback for you as well, too. But David Johnson's best years as a, you know, tight end, whatever you want to call him, plus special teams player, are long behind him. In my opinion, David Johnson's more fullback than he is anything else. But with that said, he's going to get some snaps as a second tight end during training camp and the preseason. But even so, really, really outsider as far as something, in my opinion, would have to happen to Roosevelt Nix for David Johnson to be able to make this roster.
Well, I mean, I recognize that he was brought in because the team just didn't have another fullback, and you got to have two fullbacks in camp, especially now that Nix is an established kind of starter. You might not want to play Roosevelt Nix as much. But, I mean, I said it before, Dave, I wouldn't mind having a David Johnson on the roster just because you have that flexibility to play fullback, to play tight end, to play the H-back. I mean, even San Diego kind of split him out wide a little bit. I don't really want Pittsburgh to do that, but he's played everywhere is the point I'm trying to make. And if you get a guy like that active on game day, whenever you get an injury hit at tight end or fullback or wherever it's at, you're always going to have David Johnson there able to fill in. I think there's some value in having that versatile, backfield piece and tight end guy, you know, on each Sunday.
And we saw this team last year keep three tight ends and a fullback and then one Will Johnson.
Well, yeah, that had a lot to do with special teams, though, too. So, I mean, it's a little different scenario this year that, you know, David Johnson's not the special teams guy that Will Johnson has been and was.
And Will Johnson, I mean, I want to make sure praise his special teams play, but it wasn't like Will Johnson was a demon, though.
No, but he was a multi-phase guy, and he's out there, he's running down punts, and he's on the kick, I think he was on the kick return unit, and you know, the punt return unit. So he was a multi-phase guy. So that's what, excuse me, whenever I think about special teams value. I think about, do you play one area or are you playing everywhere? And Will Johnson played everywhere, and there's intrinsic value in that.
Is Xavier Grimble the guy that's getting the most run that we know the least of about right now?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, just judging from what people say and looking at him a little bit and seeing some of the highlight clips on Steelers.com, I think he's the guy that's going to make some plays this year in the preseason, because he seems like a rocked-up athletic guy that's going to be able to run by some of these rookies and some of these, you know, four-string linebackers. So I think he'll make some wow plays. I think he's going to get a lot of buzz. It's just going to be, is there more bark than bite or not? So he's going to be an interesting guy to watch, no doubt.
How disappointed will people be if this guy has a hamstring injury and is gone via waiver wire, right off the bat? I mean, really, in all seriousness, I mean, look, we can't hold his USC film for him or against him at this point. I mean, as he's so far removed from it now.
Mm-hmm.
All we're going off of is the quote-unquote buzz from the beat writers during the OTA practices and a few comments made by teams. But if there's one guy that I'm probably most looking forward to watching during the preseason, it's him.
Yeah, he's another athletic guy. I think he'll make some big plays, like I said. I just don't know if there's enough there, because you already have Jesse James. You have Ladarius Green as your receiving threats. Where would Grimble really fit? I think a potential again for practice squad, but he'll be a fun guy to watch. So in that fourth preseason game, when most people want to turn the TV off, keep it on, because you might see some big plays from Grimble.
Paul Lang is another guy added late, obviously. His Michigan State tape wasn't awful when you talk about a blocker.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is obviously more of a Matt Spaeth than he might be more Matt Spaeth than Matt Spaeth is.
Yeah, the new age.
But the truth of the matter is, he's going to be hard. I mean, he's a big kid. Seems to be smart, right attitude. I look forward to kind of hearing, what little you're going to be reporting on him during training camp. Maybe he's a guy that can latch on as a practice squad guy, right?
Yeah, that's his best case scenario. I never discount anybody from saying they can't make the roster, especially guys that I haven't really seen yet. Just getting reps will be tough to come by. But if Ladarius Green is on active pup, it's going to move everybody up a spot. It's going to give yourself some more reps, and everyone's got an opportunity to get noticed.
I think the only question when it comes to your upcoming 53-man roster prediction is whether or not you're going to have Matt Spaeth on it.
Yep, I think Green's a lock, Jesse James is a lock. Grimble, you could debate, do you put him on there if you want to keep him a fourth tight end? Maybe some people will. So there's a little bit of intrigue at that number three spot, but that's not going to be one that really has a major effect on the team this season.
Which way are you leaning?
Man, maybe color me a little biased, but I'm still leaning David Johnson getting thrown onto that roster. I think maybe that's more my heart than my brain. But I think it makes a lot of sense to have a guy like David Johnson on the roster. Right? I mean, I don't. Why would you have? And this is an open-ended question. This isn't rhetorical. Why would you have Matt Spaeth over David Johnson as your third tight end?
The only reason would be is if David Johnson can. I mean, if Matt Spaeth can show you that he still has. Still can block.
Yeah, because I think my answer to that would be Spaeth is probably the better inline blocker, and he's got the size, and so whenever you face, even though he might not do it a lot because he's the third tight end, but if you face the Bengals that have these long, big defensive ends, the Carlos Dunlaps, the Michael Johnsons, guys like that, he wants to combat that with length and size, and David Johnson is a squatty guy compared to Matt Spaeth.
Speaking of tight ends, there seems to be the Bengals seem to be letting the cat out of the bag that Tyler Eifert will indeed probably miss first two, three games of the season, right?
Yeah, loose lips sink ships. And Duke Tobin, their director of player personnel, had hinted in a Q&A on Bengals.com that Eifert was going to be out the first couple weeks. And, of course, the Steelers and Bengals link up week two. So it's looking pretty unlikely that Tyler Eifert's going to be ready for that game.
Let's see, what else do we have to go over before we get out of here?
Oh, man, I think that was all that we had planned. Now we're just riffing it, improv comedy.
You want to go over any of these donations?
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting to bring up the page. You yell at me every time. Let me start. We got a couple minutes here, though. We're pretty good. Yeah, thank you again for everyone who's donated. I think Dave had put the widget up on the site. You know, again, if you go back, I had written about the whole, you know, what the money's for and just my whole spiel. Whenever I first put up the donations, again, you are not obligated to donate at all. You're not going to miss out on any content if you don't donate, of course. But thank you so much to the people that I have. Let me try to pull up all the names here. I've sent thank yous out to, I think, almost everybody. The only guy I haven't yet is someone who just donated, Josh Weiss. I will send you a thank you later today. But thank you, Josh Weiss, Patrick, Myella, and I'll do the Dave Bryan preface of I'm sorry if I screw up your name. I'll do the best I can. Lauren Allen, Nicholas Shineda, I think. Let's see what we have here. Dan Sartich, Dan Smith, Junior Anderson, Brian Hollard, Benjamin Emmerich. Let me load.
Let's see, a Scott Tyson, a Nathan Wheeling. Mm-hmm.
I love Scott Tyson donated in honor of Chidi Iwoma, so I appreciate that. Len, oh, I'm sorry, Len. You got a tough last name. Zafarin, maybe? Zafarin sounds about right. Doug Andrews, Abed Medawar. Spencer Crick, David Slezik, Mike Laurie, Mark Kolera, Dennis Dias. I'm going to go through just everybody, I guess.
Yeah. Holler their names
out.
For
sure. Daryl Nelmans, Barry Buchanan, Gotham Romani, Chris Sabona, George Nielsen, Jeff Foringer, Sean Cooney, Chuck D, D.B. Brooks, Chad Prince, and a couple more here. Jake Mahalo, Simon Cutts, George O'Dowdy, Andy Trister, Ed Berkheimer, Edward Smith, Carlos Facha, Mike Jones, David Bridge, Dave Zarlino, and I believe that is the list. So thank you guys a million. Can't wait for camp. Got some of my camp stuff in, some of my waterproof pens and waterproof notebooks, so that's that made me happy.
Yeah, I think we've had a total of, 40 donations so far as of Monday morning here. Obviously, we have enough time to kind of extend that. And as Alex said, if you look in the right-hand sidebar on the site on any post page, you should see the widget at the bottom that will take you to the GoFundMe page if you want to donate for this worthy cause. Alex does a lot of good work, and if you've read the stuff in the past, you know how valuable this, you know, having him at training camp really is. For the rest of you, you can follow me on Twitter at Steeders Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazor. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast @gmail.com. If you want to donate just to the podcast and not to the training camp, go to SteelersDepot.com. You see the donate button in the upper right navigational bar. Alex, until Friday, appreciate you sitting in. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.